real news.
Welcome, everyone, to the Tori Sess Show. I'm your host, Tori. Today is Thursday, Throwback Thursday. And, what's going on with this week? I actually thought it was still Wednesday for some reason. I had the pleasant experience of receiving a piece of mail that had like a Dunkin' Donuts card, right? And I don't know what possessed me. I mean, I love donuts. Who doesn't, right? And I don't know who sent it to me, but thank you. Because I actually did the most typical, stereotypical thing. I ordered donuts from my police. And I sent them donuts today. Munchkins and donuts. Because I don't need no more cushion. But I thought it was needed only because I see, in the city that I'm at right now, they arrested tons of people. And they were released immediately. The judge was like, hey, you know, personal bond. Don't forget to come back to court. Turns out they all gave fake addresses. And, you know, who's going to find them? Right? And not only that, the fact that these people that were breaking things, rioting, attacking, hurling items, Molotov, setting things on fire, were being let out, suddenly the actual police department is under investigation. If they use too much force in detaining these, you know, air quote, victims of this peaceful riot. So it was pretty bizarre, and I felt compelled to do it. And I hope, I mean, I could have used it for, well, there, you know, there's actually still like $11 on that gift card. So I guess I'll get that coffee. But, you know, it's important that we show our appreciation, even if we don't have much. And God knows, I don't have much. And all of us are in the same boat, right? But that was, I think, on behalf of them, which I said it was, I think that was something that would probably have made them smile today. And I think it's all about us caring each other and helping each other through all times. Now, the police are a very important factor of our security in every single city and state that we live in, right? Because who do you call? It's not Ghostbusters. It's the police. When someone's breaking into your house, when you get hit by a car, when something is stolen, when you lose something, right? You call the police. So it's very important, because I saw a lot going around last night, and I was kind of happy, where the Atlanta Police Department, there were divisions that were offline, not offline, et cetera, et cetera. And there was a lot of, miscommunication, but I'm pretty sure they walked off, and I'm pretty sure that it all happened, but it's all called mitigation and saving face, of course. But in all honesty, all police departments that are under scrutiny like that should indeed have themselves use their unions. They pay and they have them, and they should strike. So the bottom line here is, you know, our police are getting a lot of flack. I'm not saying that the majority of them are not. I'm not saying that the majority of them are evil. There are some really bad ones. Some of them that walk around with a permanent, walk around like they're, yep, here I am, and you get that in every line of work. You get your bad eggs in every line of work, right? I mean, look, today, the Justice Department announced the indictment against, a former DIA agent who did exactly that. He thought he could abuse his position. He thought that they could, use the information that was entrusted in to them to cause harm to our government. This is a big deal. And we have police officers every single day, just a simple traffic stop, right, that are shot at, that are killed, and they don't know what, who, and what is going to happen. Just earlier, I was sent a DM that I'm going to retweet that shows a drunk driver who was out on parole, and he was pulled over by highway patrol. The officers tried to handcuff him. He resists. They get into like a scuffle. And he managed to get back to his car and shot one of the cops. Well, both of them actually were shot at. So this is a big deal. These people are putting their lives at risk for whatever crazy person they might encounter. I mean, I'm pretty sure that even if I get encountered and I know I'm not going to threaten to kill them or, you know, shoot them, they don't know that. They don't know who they stop. They don't know what's inside your head. They have to take precautions. So moving on that, I just wanted to say what Atlanta did, what that DA did was all to save his own skin. He's under investigation. He wants to get reelected. You know, didn't he just a few weeks ago say that tasers were dangerous, deadly weapons? Well, hello. And now his officer is going to get charged. This is the problem. But, you know, we talked about that on the Tori Says Show. We talked about it back in 2018 when I said the one thing the president is not paying attention to is his peripheries. His peripheries, meaning his attorney generals. His peripheries, meaning his, you know, governors. His secretaries of state in each state, right? Tax commissioners, treasury, you know, those people. Those people that run the states, because collectively those states make up the United States. And we seem to neglect that because we're focused on the more swampy swamp in our near periphery, right? Whatever. So our police are constantly getting under attack, and it's not right. It's not right at all. And I think it's time that we have that conversation. But, you know, it's going to take a while. It's going to take a while. We're going to have to wait. We're going to have to wait. Now, on that waiting part, how long are we going to have to wait until this SCOTUS gate like accelerates, right, guys? Like, this is crazy. How long do we have to wait? How many more days is it until social media and other internet platforms notice expires? It's just a few days, right? Justice Department yesterday released. And I've already written up an article. I have so many of them in draft. I just have to get to editing them. But it's been so insane in my personal sphere, so insane that I actually don't have time. Like yesterday, I actually spoke more than a, hey, good morning and I love you to my child at like 7:30, 8 o'clock at night because I was that busy. So I will get those out there. They're always going to be pertinent and it's more of a deep dive on it. But I don't know, where do you guys think we should start? I think we should start with Nancy Pelosi and what she had to say about DACA. That way we could get our blood boiling just a little bit. But that's going to come after we hear what Rudy Giuliani had to say on policing in America. Listen to this short clip.
Former National Security Advisor John Bolton's new book, You're In It. He pointed to some serious accusations.
Oops, wrong clip. He comes later. Gosh darn it, I lost it. Darn it. Well, he said some really good things. He said some really good things in regards to how we're supposed to treat our police, how we're supposed to have faith that what they're going to do is the right thing. He made it clear on how things should be done. Now, one more thing on the police. Oklahoma. So we're having a lot of reports coming in, you know, online. I'm getting a lot of tips of something going on. Now, Tulsa, Oklahoma, the place we have to look at is the reservations. That's number one. And there's a lot more going on. These millions of ticket sales, obviously people wanting to go, but also people wanting to infiltrate. So it's very, very important that we understand that what we're going to see in Tulsa isn't even going to be close to what's going to be happening in, you know, tomorrow. And I say this because it turns out that there is a spy, a legitimate spy that is working in the White House. And a very close source of mine was asked to observe someone, a certain someone, a few months ago by me. Now, to observe someone whenever you go somewhere, it's not like you're going to follow them. You know, I'm not going to task them. Hey, I need you. Turns out I was right because I did see some weird communications that may or may not be this person, but it was shown that there is a florist that works in the White House who Valerie Jarrett appointed, okay, who actually passed a note to someone that works for MSDNC and left it at a vase flanking the door where the press comes in to the White House press room. Now, someone will say that's crazy. Well, what's crazy is that she's working there. What's crazy is that we have these weird leaks and everyone's like, well, you did it. No, you did it. You did it. No, you did it. It's like, hello, speaking from experience, it's usually the person that's pouring the coffee, putting the flowers on the table, shuffling the papers, the janitor that picks up the trash and goes through it, or the assistant that's a temp, or the interpreter that sits by there, that usually is the one that leaks and collects information. So the question is, if you have someone working in your White House that has access to almost every part, including the presidential area, like where he sleeps, how is it that they are still allowed to go? Because here, it's still there. Here's the thing. Maybe now they haven't done anything, but one day, you know, maybe too much water, maybe too much of a dose constantly. They don't care if they go to jail. They believe that they're going to be praised. I mean, here we are praising people that set the city on fire. This is how they make martyrs. So more on that later. Later. I think we should start with John Bolton. And I've expressed to you guys, there's not a lot of people that scare me, but John Bolton is one of those people that does, for the reason of what I saw in him when it comes to El Salvador. I want you to take a listen to what Rudy Giuliani had to say about John Bolton.
No, on former National Security Advisor John Bolton's new book, You're In It. He pointed to some serious accusations at President Trump. Your reaction?
He's a total backstabber. I've known him for 10 years. He says all kinds of things about me in that book. He never was man enough to ever come up to me and raise that with me when we were in the administration, when I was representing the president. If he had a problem with my representation of the president, or a legal problem that the president had, as the president's lawyer and as his friend for 10 years, you think he'd have been man enough to come and tell me?
Well, what are you going to do about it? Does the president want to sue him? Does the president want to sue him personally?
It's up to if the president would like to sue him. I can prove that what he never discussed what he says about the Ukrainian thing about me. And I don't know. I mean, he calls me a hand grenade. I kind of feel really, really complimented by that, because he's a hydrogen bomb. I mean, the statements this guy has made over 10 years and he's calling me a hand grenade. I mean, most presidents were too afraid to have him in the cabinet because they were afraid he'd take us to war, you know, over Central Park or something.
Yep, that's right. Over Central Park or something, because that's the slaughter in El Salvador. I'll never forget it. I'm just saying. And, you know, that is what terrifies me the most when it comes to him. Now, I want you guys to listen to what the press secretary had to say about
Bolton. Now, let's go to the White House, and White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany joins us from, looks like, the North Lawn. Good morning to you, Kayleigh.
Good morning.
We have been talking about these police officers down in Atlanta being charged yesterday. We've had different opinions. Some say the charges were appropriate. Some say that the officers were overcharged. Some have said it was premature. Does the president feel the charges were appropriate?
Well, the president has said this was a terrible situation. It was sad. But he noted last night that, look, you cannot resist a police officer. If you have a disagreement with them, he said, you take it up with them after. And he's reiterated that he hopes this officer gets a fair shake in court. It's up to the justice system now. It's up to the state courts. But he wants the police officer to get a fair shake, because all too often police officers do not.
All right, Kayleigh, the other big story yesterday was Senator Tim Scott's bill, Senate engineer bill, on criminal justice reform, I should say police reform or improvement. Did the president know about this in detail and work at all with Tim Scott on this? And does he expect Democratic senators to try to go in, get their roll up their sleeves and have input on this and get it out of committee.
Yes, the president, the administration, we did work very closely with Senator Scott. This is a great bill. It's one that closely tracks the president's executive order. It's very strong. It's fair. It's even-handed. We hope to see it pass. We hope Democrats will come and join us in this endeavor, because all too often they play partisan politics, and the bill that the Democrats have put out is an absolute non-starter. For instance, they roll back qualified immunity, something that's existed for a very long time in this country, and the Harlow Court, when the Supreme Court ruled on in that case, said, look, if, you know, with qualified immunity, there are big social costs if you don't have it there, namely police officers pulling back, not patrolling the streets. That's an example and something that would be devastating for this country. We see what's happening in Seattle, and we see the law and order issues we've had across the country when there aren't enough law enforcement officers.
So, Kaylee, the DOJ filed that complaint in federal court to prevent John Bolton's book from being released. It's supposed to be released next Tuesday. He did an interview with another network. This is a portion that was just released from that network. Watch this.
I don't think he's fit for office. I don't think he has the competence to carry out the job. There really isn't any guiding principle that I was able to discern other than what's good for Donald Trump's reelection. He was so focused on the reelection that longer-term considerations fell by the wayside. So if he thought he could get a photo opportunity with Kim Jong-un at the demilitarized zone in Korea, there was considerable emphasis on the photo opportunity and the press reaction to it, and little or no focus on what such meetings did for the bargaining position of the United States.
So this is going to be over all over every network, the release of this book right before the election. What's your reaction to the timing of this?
My reaction is that John Bolton has discredited himself. He is a misguided hawk on foreign policy and a weak dove of an author. This man is someone who praised President Trump as being strong on foreign policy, not making the mistakes of previous administrations, perfectly prepared. These are all quotes from John Bolton. He said President Trump understands President Ronald Reagan's peace through strength. He's on the record saying this. So John Bolton's book is debunked by none other than John Bolton. He's discredited on both sides of the aisle. And if you thought Comey was the most disliked man in America, I think John Bolton has now taken that title.
Well, let's see whether or not the book does come out as scheduled on Tuesday, or if the courts are able to step in. Meanwhile, let's talk a little bit about the weekend. We're going to restart the rallies. The president is down in Tulsa. Kaylee, you know, there have been a lot of people who have said, look, it's too early at this point because of social distancing to put so many people into a jam-packed arena. And Dr. Fauci yesterday said that he would not attend because he said he was in one of the high-risk groups going forward. We understand apparently the National Guard has been called in as well to help. And some are suggesting that the president is not taking the COVID pandemic seriously. He's just more interested in getting back on the road and getting his base energized.
Look, the president has taken COVID seriously. It was, after all, the president who put in place travel restrictions, acted early when the Democrats were calling that move xenophobic. But with regard to the rally in particular, Oklahoma's entering phase three. This is permitted under those guidelines. And it's interesting to watch the media, some in the media, not all, but some, really not listen to science, but instead cherry pick science when it's ideologically convenient, because we've seen some in the media praise the protesters, make no mention of the fact that they're not socially distanced or wearing masks in some cases, but then target the Trump rally or target a church when a church wants to reopen appropriately.
Sure.
Socially distanced.
Kaylee, I understand that, but you know, this is going to be the first time an indoor stadium has been pretty much packed to the rafters. You know, with the other, you know, you don't see the NBA, you know, you don't see any professional sports teams out and about at this point. I mean, this is a step we have not yet seen during this coronavirus pandemic.
Well, this is permitted under phase three.
I understand it is, but nobody else has done it before. Are you worried about that?
We are leading on that. There will be hand sanitizer. There will be masks handed out. There will be precautions taken. So we believe that this is a safe opportunity to congregate and to really celebrate the great things that President Trump does each and every day in this administration.
Yeah, before I get to my question, just to finish this off, Kaylee, being that demand's so high, has there been talk about moving this maybe to a stadium outdoors?
Well, That would be a decision for the campaign, so I'm unaware if they're considering moving it outdoors or not, but right now it's indoor in that new arena.
Why are they so adamant, all media members, to find out where it's going to be done, how it's going to be done? I'll tell you what. Tomorrow is going to be a depiction of Red Summer. The riots that you saw were a dry run. Bolton is adding to the fire. Everyone is adding to the fire. There are so many discussions being had. I just saw fly through on my Twitter a tweet from Chris Berg, who's a journalist that I like out in Fargo, who says the city of Fargo mayor issued an emergency declaration because of protests this weekend. In it, he says he has evidence that some protesters intend to carry weapons. His declaration now strips all people of their Second Amendment rights on public sidewalks, streets, and parks. Can he do that? So state law says that the mayor's ordinance is null and void due to state law. Now, the AGs are going to answer that. So here we have a question of your rights. He claims, whereas there is evidence that some protesters intend to carry weapons on their person during the Juneteenth assembly march, and said assembly and march will not remain peaceful, that such marches and assemblies will become violent to persons or properties and will rise to a substantial and dangerous level of civil disturbance, disorder, riot, and other occurrence. Now, considering what happened in Atlanta, considering what happened in all other cities, think that this little town, Fargo, that was also a center of a riot, what they're going to do. Now, the president had initially scheduled his actual rally to happen on Juneteenth and changed it. This is going to be a really bad weekend. I suggest everyone go out today, get some water and some popcorn, some stuff to cook, because you might not be going outside for a couple days. Considering, where I'm at, I had a whole week of lockdown and, curfew. And I'm pretty sure these are going to be reinstated, considering that there's going to be... we called them protests, right? The riots. So I guess this one will be called a celebration. This is going to be quite interesting. And it's interesting to see what kind of celebrations are going to be happening. We have things happening in Florida. There's going to be a week-long celebration of a national festival. Listen to this. Of Juneteenth celebrations. This is a pretty big deal. Philadelphia will have a Juneteenth parade and festival. They said that they were going to cancel it in the interest of public safety. The JuneteenthPhilly.org, they're canceling it. That tells you everything you need to know. Like I said, this end of June is going to be very, very testy, and we won't be in the clear in regards to actual danger until I would say after July 5th. So it's important for us to understand that while Juneteenth is a celebration for many, and it should be in that essence, it is actually used for different reasons. And that is a problem that, is extremely concerning, for all. I really hope that I am 100% wrong, but this is one of those fixed points, and only time will tell if indeed they will use what they learned and push it forward. And as you understand, there is a big issue. I'm very careful with how I want to say this. There's a very big issue right now that we have with civil unrest, in the sense that everything that... Let me pause that for a second. Everything that spells out law and order, everything that spells out structure and justice, everything is being challenged. So keep that in mind this weekend. And I'll see you just after this break. All right, before we enter into what I want to discuss, which is the, you know, how the judges are the most corrupt. This is SCOTUS Gate at its finest. What we saw was, you know, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, use process errors, right, to excuse and throw out a case and waste our money and time to redo it. And he was called out by four judges. This is horrific, and it's time we start talking about what I've been saying. Chief Justice Roberts was within two meetings in January with Barack Hussein Obama and the rest of his ilk. The first one was done in order to see if the FISA warrant was approved again to be renewed with all this information they got and what happened, if they can annul or delay the inauguration of the President of the United States of America, President Donald J. Trump. There was another meeting in which Barack Hussein Obama asked for legal guidance once again and wanted the Supreme Court to submit a memo or a recommendation to the president officially to find a way within our laws that Barack Hussein Obama remain in power so that elections can be done again. This was a conversation that was had multiple times before the inauguration of President Donald J. Trump. No one is talking about. I'm the only one talking about it when everyone should, but we will get to that. What I want to tell you is that there's over 1 million people that will be marching in New York City tomorrow. 1 million. Moved by the Keith Institute, which looks at things like inclusionism and income movement and the data union and all linking back to the Sunrise Movement. Like I said, the riots were simply a test. It is going to be really, really ugly. So for anyone living in a city, you know, in Atlanta, there's going to be Juneteenth protests.
And Juneteenth is a fitting day for artist Charmaine Minifield to start a project at the historic Oakland Park Cemetery in East Atlanta, a big project that will take a year start to finish.
My aesthetic is basically focused on celebrating the ancestors and specifically women. I focus on the idea of preserving Black narratives with my work. Okay, Juneteenth, preserving Black narratives, remembrance as resistance. So what I'm doing is for this project is we're going into Oakland Cemetery, Atlanta's historically segregated cemetery, and we're acknowledging 800 plus unmarked graves. And it will end with an installation of a praise house. And the praise house, it will be a replica of what was originally the first Black church. 15 feet high panoramic mural that's going to be inside of the Studio Plex water tower. Art to me is, I've said it before, the heartbeat of humanity. It's where we meet and our cultures are equal. And that safe space to me is very female. If I could just proclaim that I belong and that all, you know, the stories of Black women belong in the consciousness, collective consciousness of our people, then I feel like we could affect significant change in our communities.
And she'll be working on it all year long. You may recognize some of Minifield's other works of art. She was commissioned by the Super Bowl host committee for its Off the Wall project. She also created murals featuring former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick.
So, okay, so this is a justice warrior artist, but keep in mind, I really love the message that she's putting together, recognizing just how the people that actually built the nation, you know, in its infancy were treated as secondary citizens, because they were. Because unlike what Tim Kaine said, you know, they didn't inherit slavery, they created it, blah, blah, blah. Look, slavery existed from pyramids were built by slaves. So this guy's nuts. I mean, like his son. Because he was arrested too, remember, for, what was it? Oh yeah, Antifa. So here we are, something that should be beautiful, something that should be, you know, celebrated, something that should be amazing for, you know, the descendants of those there, you know, that is what should be done, right? Celebrated. It's going to be destroyed because there are going to be protests like no other. And remember, the police officer just got all these charges. It's going to be crazy. It is going to be crazy. Again, I say it. Juneteenth should be a great celebration for our descendants of those that helped build this great nation that were treated as slaves. Instead, it's going to turn into a bloodbath. And, you know, how do we stop that? Now, I want to shift gears a little bit. I think I want to talk about SCOTUS now, because I did mention it already. And it's important that we talk about it, because it is something that makes me very uncomfortable. It makes me uncomfortable because the Obama era illegal, unconstitutional DACA program was actually upheld, in the sense that it wasn't dispelled by the Supreme Court. This is unprecedented, but again, gives fuel to the fire for Juneteenth celebrations that are coming. And you're going to say, well, what does that happen? For some reason, if you're anything but a blonde white person, right, you're DACA. You're supposed to be all for allowing immigrants to come in with no checks and balances. Yet when you as an American try to go to another nation, you are scrutinized on a point system. They look at all your history to decide if you should be allowed. This is one of the biggest atrocities that we've seen, but this is SCOTUS Gate. It started, like I said, in May. I believe the peak's going to come, and it's going to be silenced with this bloodbath that we're going to see this weekend. God, I pray it doesn't happen.
Is now joining us, Oklahoma Senator James Lankford. He's a Republican who serves on the Homeland Security Committee. Senator, good morning to you.
Good morning as well. Busy morning.
Good morning,
Senator. Yeah, we wanted to talk about police reform and a lot of other issues, but let's start with DACA. Your colleague, the Democratic leader, Chuck Schumer, was on the Senate floor saying he's crying tears of joy about this. Then he walked across the street to the Supreme Court, where there are DACA recipients cheering this decision on. My sense is you have a much different reaction, sir.
Yeah, this makes the future for DACA recipients even more murky. You go back to actual history here, not the rewrite of history, but actual history. In February 2018, the Senate put on the floor four different bills to try to deal with the legal status for DACA. One of those was from the president, offering the ability to be able to give permanent citizenship to those individuals from DACA. Literally days before there was a final agreement on those four, the Supreme Court snatched it away and said, we want to look at this first. And they created a situation that would have been resolved 2 years ago into this muddy morass that we're in now, that they've now said basically every future administration has to play Mother May I with every court to say, do I like your opinion and your reasons enough? If you don't, I can keep sending it back to you and keep sending it back to you. And any partisan judge in any court in America could take any opinion they don't like or executive action and suddenly hold up any president. So this does create a situation where every president in the future is bound by President Trump's executive actions unless they can find a court that disagrees with that. And that's just arbitrary on its face.
Senator, it's great to have you here this morning to react to this news. Nancy Pelosi just spoke a short time ago on Capitol Hill. Her reaction is, this supports our values as a country. On the ruling itself, she said, we were in such dread as to what could happen at the court. So we'll continue to see how that side reacts. But meanwhile, we're waiting for reaction from the president. How would you like to see the White House proceed?
Well, the president, I would assume, is going to come out and say, okay, we're going to go back and reevaluate this. Clearly, no president is supposed to be, until today, bound by the actions of a previous president. No president can make legislation that can't be undone. But now the court has said any president can only undo the actions of a previous president if the court agrees to that. And that's absurd, again, on its face. That violates all separation of powers. So I'd assume the president's going to come out, challenge the issue of separation of powers, which he should, step out and say that the White House has worked for years to try to get to a legal solution on DACA that actually goes through Congress, not through this arbitrary system through the courts, and that the White House is going to put out a proposal in the days ahead. But I agree with John Roberts, the other John Roberts, as we say, that when he made the statement, this is not going to happen before the election. There's a lot going on right now, and so it puts the situation even more arbitrary for those folks that are in DACA instead of getting it to a solution that we would have had 2 years ago.
A lot going on indeed, and one of those big issues, of course, is police reform. We were here about 24 hours ago, and we were showing you and your Republican colleagues live. Tim Scott is leading the effort, but you're there front and center as well. Shortly after that news conference, the number two Democrat in the Senate, Dick Durbin, had this to say about Tim Scott's effort and your effort. Listen.
What we say on the Democratic side is we cannot waste this historic moment, this singular opportunity. Let's not do something that is a token, half-hearted approach.
He talked about a token approach. Obviously, Tim Scott, as the only black Republican in the Senate, took offense to that. Durbin apologized later. I want to get lost just on the back and forth on that, but I want you to react to that, and most importantly, moving forward, given this kind of tension back and forth, how do you move forward? What do you expect to get in terms of bipartisan reform, sir?
I would expect that we wouldn't pour gasoline on a fire, that we as Congress would try to be able to work to actually pour water on the fire at this point. But Democrats have thrown out terms like what Dick Durbin threw out, that it's a token effort, knowing exactly what that means. We had Sherrod Brown came out and basically said Mitch McConnell is appealing to his bigoted base, basically saying all Republicans are bigots, so this is a way to be able to divide it. What they're arguing about is one area of this bill that we disagree on, and it's on qualified immunity. They want to strip away and expose every police officer in the country to litigation all the time. We do not. And so they're saying it's completely unacceptable. It's a weak bill in that. There are lots of areas of common ground on this between the two bills, because when we deal with racism and police reform, these are not supposed to be, at least, partisan issues. And we haven't approached it in a partisan way. Quite frankly, I'm a Republican by choice because I believe in the party of Lincoln and equal opportunity for every person and equal access and equal justice under the law. That's a basic principle of the party of Lincoln that we have established 150 years ago. That still remains true for us today. But for Democrats, they're just trying to throw out over and over again, all Republicans are racist, they're isolationists, they're whatever it may be, and to be able to throw that out. And it continues to be more and more divisive as the country. And as Democrats look at Tim Scott and to say, well, he's the only black Republican in the Senate, they sit in their conference where there are two black Democrats in the Senate, and they somehow think, okay, well, we don't have one, we have two, and that somehow changes all the dynamics. It's just bizarre in the conversation. So let's look at the issues and treat each other as Americans rather than try to divide, because there are areas where law enforcement and where communities of color and where all Americans can agree on, and that's what we're trying to zero in on so we can make us a more perfect union.
Senator, a brand new reaction now going back to the DACA decision. About an hour after that was handed down, President Trump has just tweeted this. These horrible and politically charged decisions coming out of the Supreme Court are shotgun blasts into the face of people that are proud to call themselves Republicans or conservatives. We need more justices or we will lose our Second Amendment and everything else. Vote Trump 2020. I just want to point out that Chief Justice John Roberts led this ruling. The recent LGBTQ decision was authored by Neil Gorsuch, a Trump pick for the Supreme Court. Your reaction to that?
Well, that we also go back to the Obamacare decision that was led by Chief Justice Roberts. This is the same band that did the Obamacare decision, is the same band that's doing the DACA decision on this. In the Obamacare decision, Chief Justice Roberts determined that Congress has the right to do anything they want to as long as it's a tax. It was a sweeping new invention that if Congress declares something a tax, they can require any American to do anything they want to. This is a new invention of a quasi-legislative action that's not really legislative. It comes out of the executive executive branch, but if the executive branch and the courts agree, basically they can create new legislation on Americans. Again, it's odd to be able to see it. I would expect it from the liberal justices. I'm surprised by Chief Justice John Roberts, but after the decision from the from Obamacare and then now from this decision, I guess I shouldn't be surprised.
All right. Senator James Lankford covered a lot of ground with us. Appreciate you rolling with the breaking news. Thanks for coming on.
Well, you know, one thing he said is Lincoln, 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 Lincoln. And that is exactly what President Trump has to do right now is channel him some Abraham Lincoln and fire the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, just like Lincoln had the cojones to do. We need to get that done. We need to get that done faster than anything. And this is necessary because we cannot have a perfect union. We cannot have law and order if the people that are supposed to be ruling about law cannot do that correctly. Now, I want you to know that the ruling that came today, the ruling that was done was a whitewash. It was seriously a whitewash. In fact, the ruling and the actual decision by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court was incredibly politically motivated. So in the sense that he tried to avoid political conflict, even though, you know, he didn't have to. See, there's process errors all the time. There's like, you put the wrong date, you don't file it correctly. I don't know, the font was wrong, the spacing was, there's tons of stuff a judge can throw it back at you and say, forget it. Well, even though the Chief Justice made a legally correct decision, because he was looking for one, right? It is still wrong. Because it is bizarre as to how he decided that he is going to uphold something that it's so egregious because it is so against our Constitution. It is the duty of the court to apply the law, to be neutral. And it is not so. It is not so. It is so tainted. This was such a cowardly push. So cowardly, so disgusting. DACA is not legal. They know it. And yet they let it fly because of, I don't know, whatever his reason was that it wasn't filed correctly. So they both parties to this decision, which is the loser crowd, that perverse justice to cover their own skin. And Justice Roberts, you know, clone lives matter. We can start pushing that so you don't have to keep hiding, but this has to come out, period. So 5-4, both camps, both agree that DACA in itself is illegal, but for process reasons, they're going to let it stand. Are you kidding? What does this say? What does this say? That we're going to have to start again? This took how many years? And now we're going to have to start all over again? This is disgusting. It's disgusting. It's disgusting that we have people in office that would do something like that. Wait, office. On a bench. Because it seems like all the problems lately are coming from people that are sitting on a bench. Pretty interesting, huh?
All right, we've got some breaking news from the Supreme Court and a ruling on DACA.
That's
Shannon
right.
Bream joining us now.
Yeah, the Supreme Court has rejected the president's bid to end legal protections for young immigrants, the DACA program. We've got Shannon Bream, our correspondent and anchor, who covers all of this. Shannon, good morning.
Good morning, Ed. So this is one of those very complex opinions in which there are different groups getting together, agreeing on part of it, dissenting on part of it. It's one of those. But the bottom line we can tell right now is the Trump administration's efforts to roll back DACA. Apparently, the court says they were not good enough. They were not done properly. If you're going to take action like this, you have to follow something called the Administrative Procedures Act. And what it says is that you can't take action that's arbitrary and capricious. There has to be a reason, an explanation. for what you're doing. Now, the Trump administration's trying to roll back DACA. They took a couple stabs at it. And what I've been able to read so far in this opinion from the court is that they don't think the Trump administration got it right. Not that DACA couldn't be withdrawn, couldn't be rescinded or repealed in some way, but that this administration didn't go about it the right way. It looks like the opinion is by the Chief Justice. He is joined by what we would call the more liberal wing of the part of the court, Justices Breyer, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Ginsburg. It looks like there is a dissent by Justice Thomas. Again, it's one of those very fractured opinions. But the bottom line for now looks like the Trump administration's attempts thus far to rescind DACA, which affects 700 to 800,000 estimated people who were brought to the country as children illegally. They have been given protections against deportation, ability to work here in the states with some type of legal protection, but not the status of citizenship. So for now, it looks like this decision is against the Trump administration and DACA will be upheld. For now, we'll keep reading. Yeah. We'll get some of the details for you, but that's the bottom line.
This is a big one because it involves the so-called dreamers that you've been laying out. And President Obama basically gave them these legal protections, as you know, and I'm going to give you a chance to continue to go through the opinion as we go through this together. And President Obama, by executive fiat back in 2012, as I recall, had basically given these young folks legal protections. And part of the argument here is that this is something that should be legislated and that Congress should intervene and actually pass a law if there were going to be legal protections. This should not be done by executive fiat. So as you gather more information there, Shannon, if you want to weigh in on that part of it, but also it seems interesting that this seems like another example of the Chief Justice, John Roberts, as you suggest, siding with the liberal wing of the Supreme Court that is not going to leave conservatives happy.
Yeah, and it's interesting because earlier in the week, you know, we got the decision about LGBTQ workplace rights. The Chief Justice also sided with the more liberal wing, as did Justice Neil Gorsuch. They were together in that one. And we always try to read the tea leaves and who's writing these opinions and what it means. And we can do a little bit of process of elimination. So we thought that the Chief Justice was probably writing this DACA opinion. But what that means is we didn't know until we got it just now which way it would go, because he has oftentimes crossed over and built a coalition on one wing of the court or the other. So I can tell you, though, that it looks like there are additional opinions filed by Justice Sotomayor concurring in the main part of the opinion that DACA was not properly rescinded by the Trump administration. Justice Thomas has a mixed opinion, but you would expect those in the dissent who are not for the ultimate decision here, Thomas, Gorsuch, Alito, and Kavanaugh, objecting to what the court has done. You may remember part of this was then acting DHS Secretary Elaine Duke wrote a memo. There was another action by then DHS Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen trying to withdraw DACA and say, these are the reasons why we're doing it. And some people have argued, and there was a whole argument during the case itself about why they just didn't do a better memo, a better write-up. Is there a way that they could solve this defect for getting rid of DACA? If someone in the administration could put together a better memo explaining what they were doing and the underpinning for it, would that solve the problem? And basically what it sounds like the court has said today in what we could see so far is just those attempts thus far, these memos saying this is why we're getting rid of DACA, weren't good enough. They were considered that arbitrary and capricious standard that they have to get past. So the administration right now, and you know the president has said many times, if we don't get a good ruling from the court or if there are other circumstances, we're going to think about ways to handle DACA. He has said many times that they would come to some kind of agreement, that there would be motivation on the Hill to get something done. So we'll see now the fallout of this decision. But for now, DACA is upheld in its current form.
Okay, so I want you guys to listen carefully on this, okay? And we'll continue this right after the break. But what they said was that it wasn't filed correctly. So number one is, why wasn't it filed correctly? Oh, because the judges don't want to legislate from the bench because they shouldn't, right? That's what they're saying. So this is what the Chief Justice said. We don't legislate from the bench. Yet that is exactly what they did just a little while ago, didn't they? When it came to the LGBT and legalizing or changing the law and the title by incorporating sexual orientation as sex. They did that. They changed Title VII. But now They don't want to legislate from the bench, and they want Congress to fix it. They want something that they passed, that they allowed to happen by executive order, that was unconstitutional, and they can't do it. You know what? What we can do is an executive order striking down the whole executive order of DACA. That's what President Trump should do. That is done with a nice little pen. And, you know, obviously they have my address. I'd like a pen. That's what he has to do. We don't need to be playing around anymore. And this just goes to show how compromised our benches are. This is only the beginning of showing the world their true face and their true actions. This has to end. There is no law and order if your judges are corrupt nationwide. There is no law and order when blackmail, the most expensive, most elite currency, is the one that they use to get things done. That is what we need to do, is fix our judicial branch. I've been saying this. It's not executive, not legislative. Those get fixed by us. We need to get the executive branch to fix the judicial. I'll see you guys after the break. Welcome back, everyone, to the Tori Says Show. I'm your host, Tori. So, okay, we're going to kind of just continue on the Supreme Court before we get into a little bit more about these riots, just a little bit, because I was given some hard, but thank you for that, Chris, information on that, something that we've talked about on air here before in regards to indictments following up those riots and how coordinated they are. But the key issue here with the Supreme Court, and I'm going to say this with a little bit of a grain of salt, because I'm super salty about what they did, okay? But it's good. Well, they could have put it off in a sense that the DACA statement or actions by the Supreme Court didn't happen the way they should have, because this allows us to do it another way, but also in conjunction with the fact that we have the Juneteenth riots that are going to be happening, this is quite astounding. Now, I want you guys to know that what we are seeing from our judicial benches is only the tip of the iceberg as it goes higher and higher than that. You have to understand that if your judges are compromised, justice cannot be upheld. When your judges are politicized, justice cannot be upheld. Regardless if your prosecutor is good or not, it cannot be upheld. I want you guys to listen to a video that I came across, and I'm gonna find it because I actually lost it over the break, believe it or not. But it was quite interesting because I've never seen such relaxed answers. I want to say, do I say answers by a judge to people that were found having broken property and burnt cars, which, by the way, this happened in Cleveland, they have an officer under investigation for using force during the riots. Now, in addition to that, it turns out that the actual judges, right? First of all, Cleveland Division of Police Internal Affairs is investigating force used by an officer during the riots that occurred in downtown Cleveland last month. And this is, you know, obviously a concern, right? That they're now saying that the police are not allowed to use force to remove or stop rioters, you know, even if they have deadly weapons in their hands or anything like that, they are not allowed to. Now, also, they are cracking down by saying that, you know, the police aren't upholding themselves the way they should, that they're supposed to focus on their image, and it has nothing to do with the riots, and that if they stop them from rioting, it's racist, and the whole nine yards. And don't forget that in Cleveland yesterday, three people were shot as well. And over the weekend, about 10 of them were. So it's really, really bizarre as to what is going on with our police, considering tomorrow people are going to need them the most. It is insane. There are reports from Fox, of course, and they say the I-team obtained records that show that so far in June, Cleveland Division of Police received more than 20,000 911 calls, but they didn't answer about 3,000 of them. So they're not picking up the phone. They're not doing their job right. You know, there was, you know, there were instances of, oh, you are supposed to uphold the law. You're supposed to focus on, you know, just the law and nothing else. And you're not allowed to use force. You're not allowed to monitor people. You're not allowed to not answer questions. You're not allowed to, you're not. The pressure of being a police officer right now is insane. There are police officers all over the nation right now resigning, saying, you know, I don't have to put up with this anymore. I don't. And they don't. They don't. They're warrants that are being issued for suspects across the nation right now. And absolutely no one is talking about it. This is why I wanted to point that out. No one is talking about it. The judges have let people out of, you know, court. They'd come up. It was like 5 seconds. Yeah, don't forget to come back to court. You hear? Says the judge. Yeah, okay. Sure. With my fake address. Sure. I'll be right there. Sure. No problem. This is how justice is served. You don't even background check to see if the person lives where they say? Is that how it goes? This is what happens? Come on. How are we getting justice served? How are the businesses that were destroyed getting justice served? And now it's going to get even worse. So what do the cops do? Do they let them with their weapons shoot out? I mean, should they just shoot people and burn things and the police aren't allowed to do anything? Guns were stolen from patrol vehicles. Guns were stolen for patrol vehicles that were set on fire, that were all coordinated. You know, I saw this report that was so awesome that they actually tracked down people because they were wearing custom shirts that they had purchased online. And they found this chick from that, found the address where it was delivered by issuing a subpoena, and tracked her down in Philly for setting two cars on fire. I don't know if you guys saw that report. That's pretty awesome. They found the t-shirt. It was being sold on Etsy. They found that somebody on Etsy, they found who purchased it. They found this chick into, you know, that she bought it from there. That led to her LinkedIn. They found out the address that the shirt was done. And here we go. This woman is now arrested. Now, I want you guys to listen to this. There was an interview that was done, And here we go. Listen, a federal investigation is underway to determine whether additional charges will be filed against those accused of participating in the May 30th riot in downtown Fargo. We talked about that. I already told you who was the one organizing it and how the organizer, Zach, is actually a board member of Antifa, and actual people that are in the Senate, the state Senate of North Dakota, follow this guy, like Boucher, or their insane Native American, pandering. I mean, this woman, Ruth Buffalo, is nuts. She even claims she's DSA. Zach is also DSA, which, in fact, the majority of the people that are part of Antifa are part of the Democrat Socialists of America. Anyway, in an interview with KFGO, U.S. Attorney Drew Wrigley said that federal law enforcement officials have been gathering video, audio, social media, and firsthand witnesses' accounts to see if any evidence is suitable to be presented to a federal grand jury. Quote, there were significant number of people conducting themselves in ways that were life-threatening, property-threatening, and were disruptive to this community. If we get to the end of this and there are provable federal charges, they will be presented to a grand jury for federal indictment. Now, at least 18 people have already been arrested on state charges. He says that firearm-related charges to manufacture explosives in the form of the Molotov cocktails, destruction of police property, assaults on police officers, and crossing state lines for the purpose of rioting are among federal charges that could apply. He also asked about persistent reports about buses being used for transport. And he said, there is some of that. For sure, there's coordinated transportation. I'm not going to characterize what kind of vehicles, but there were definitely vehicles spotted that day that were moving significant numbers of people. You know, if you were driving an Uber or a Lyft, you could be in trouble. The FBI, the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, and the Department of Homeland Security are among the agencies involved in the investigation. Wrigley says radio and television news reports and social media communications are among the sources being examined. And yes, they should. And this was tiny little Fargo. So if tiny, itsy bitsy, not red, only on, you know, only people only think that they're conservative because they're not, right? So this itsy bitsy city that has a maximum of 275,000 people was torched, right? And, you know, destroyed, not completely. They only have a small, you know, main area. If they're doing this investigation, imagine what's coming down in other cities. But I wouldn't expect it to be happening in cities like New York because they have an attorney general that promotes this kind of behavior. I don't know if it's happening in Atlanta, but I'm pretty sure the FBI is doing something and prosecutors are doing something. But we have to think about it. Can it really be done? Because we just saw, a prosecutor, a DA, literally saying that this police officer shot and killed and he's going up for murder and another 10 charges. Think about it. So imagine this weekend. I told you that this summer was going to be crazy. It was an understatement, wasn't it? It was a complete understatement because what you are about to see for the remaining, time here of June, and up until July 5th or 6th, is going to knock your socks off. You're going to be devastated. You're going to be thinking, okay, that's it. That's it. We're done. I mean, there's nothing we could do. We're done. We're super done. We're done. Hey, but we are not silent majority minority. We are massive. We are so huge. You know, we are in the solar system of majorities. We're Jupiter. Okay. And the Democrats and liberals are not even Mercury. Okay. They're not even half the size of the moon. They're tiny. There's nothing. They're pushing for reparations. They're pushing for lynching. They're telling you that lynching is, came from executions. Executions actually came from that. But anyway, they're skewing everything. What we have to show is deliberate actions. Deliberate actions. Remember, the Democrats have tried everything to take this president down. Everything. And they haven't succeeded. Why do you think that they're going to succeed now? Why do you think that they're going to get it done now? Pain goes both ways. If If they are in pain, if they are screeching and trying to maintain power, you're going to feel it because you're in the middle. You have to understand that pain goes both ways. Every single time a fellow brother or sister, you know, is in pain, we do feel it. We just don't recognize it anymore. Every time, you know, something happens to them, you're going to feel it because they are in agony. You can hear them screaming. You can. You know, yesterday I posted I retweeted a picture of those Antifa members, you know, those clowns that are judging us for being racist and crazy and evil that looked horrible. And there was one comment on there that said, oh man, looking at their faces like that collectively, I feel sorry for them. You know what? I have to agree. I actually feel pity for these people that think that whatever they're doing is the right thing. Imagine being that. Imagine being so brainwashed that you can't even discern what is correct and what is not, what is good and what is bad, and how you justify evil. That's the thing. Evil. They will stop at nothing. And, you know, what we have to do is make sure that we're ready and we're wholesome and we pray and we hope that we can keep our cool too. Because that's the one thing. Can we keep our cool? Because are we going to be able to keep our cool? We have to keep our cool or we're no better than them. Nancy Pelosi had her little shindig today about DACA, right? Did you guys hear it? I think we should listen to some of it because it's important. You need to hear what she has to say. It's pretty interesting.
It goes that way, but this way is the American way. We're very proud of it. So that was this morning. Last night, in the Judiciary Committee, late last night, the committee overwhelmingly passed out the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act, which will now go to rules and then come to the floor before the 4th of July. We're very proud of the work that was done by Chairwoman Karen Bass, the chair of the Judiciary Committee, but also the chair of the Crime Subcommittee of the Judiciary Committee. Morning, the Supreme Court and DACA. Last night, the Judiciary Committee and the Justice and Policing Act. Tomorrow is Juneteenth, a day that we observe as a day of freedom in our country. It's the day that people in the West found out about the Emancipation Proclamation. In observance of that, I have sent a letter, she will see, to the clerk of the House, directing the clerk to remove the portraits of four previous speakers of the House who served in the Confederacy. We didn't know about this until we were taking inventory of the statues, and the curator told us that there were four paintings of speakers in the Capitol of the United States, four speakers who had served in the Confederacy. So tomorrow, Juneteenth, the clerk will oversee removal of those Confederate speakers from the House. As I've said before, there's no room in the hallowed halls of this democracy, this temple of democracy, to memorialize people who embody violent bigotry and grotesque racism of the Confederacy. You have to see the remarks that they had made, how oblivious they were to what our founders had in mind in our country. We must lead by example, so we're glad that that is gone. I'll take some questions in a moment about the Justice in Policing Act, but we are very proud of the legislation that was put together. It was the work of decades. These bills have been in the hopper for a while. But in terms of the public sentiment to get the job done in a strong way, the moment is now. as we take action on the injustice in policing, we also have to recognize other injustice in our country, whether it's injustice in healthcare, in the economy, in environmental injustice that exists. The list goes on. And one manifestation of it right now is the coronavirus impact, having a disparate impact on people of color in our country. And so we're hoping and pushing and advocating for the passage of the HEROES Act. Open our economy, testing, tracing, treating, isolating. Get the job done. We don't have a vaccine and we don't have a cure. Hopefully we will, and that science will be the answer to our prayers in that regard. But we do have testing, tracing, treatment, and we want to address that in a way that takes the data, that shows the disparate impact on people of color in our country so that we can save their lives. The legislation also has an impact on our economy, and yesterday and the day before, the chair of the Fed, Jerome Powell, urged Congress not to take our foot off the brake. I would think it would be of concern to Congress if Congress were to pull back from the support that it is providing too quickly. I do think it would be appropriate to think about continuing support for people who are newly out of work and for smaller businesses who are struggling. The economy is not just now beginning to recover. It is a critical phase, and I think the support would be well placed at this time. He's not the only one. Moody's, economic forecasting firm Moody's, published an analysis that highlights the need for the HEROES Act. Quote, without additional help from Congress and the administration, prospects for a double-digit unemployment throughout the end of next year, and even this assumes nothing else goes wrong, like a serious second wave of the virus. How well the economy does in the next several years depends critically on what lawmakers decide to do in the next few weeks. And in the next few weeks, we are hoping that, as you've seen, they went from never, we're not doing another bill, to well, maybe, but not so big, and maybe, but not so soon. And you see they're having their own internal debate about the size and scope and timing of what happens next. But we must honor our heroes, help our state and local governments. I've told you before, speaker.gov/HEROES Act to see what it means to you in your community. Open our economy, testing, tracing, treating, and isolation, and direct payments. They have said, has been said by economists, including Chairman Powell, that improvement that was viewed and made of employment numbers was largely the cost of the unemployment insurance and the direct payment. We must do that.
Okay, so that was pretty interesting. I'm going to hop over to find the questions that she's going to answer. Now, if you notice that she said on Juneteenth, they're going to be taking out Confederate statues. It's very important to see the coordinated effort by all of them to, you know, love that number 19, don't they? So ironic that a holiday that should be held and beloved by all that believe in freedom, no matter what color and creed you are, is, 619, of course, they wouldn't have, symbolism will be their downfall, I tell you that.
To do for the whole country, and at the same time honor our heroes. Yes, sir.
Madam Speaker, I wonder if you, you said you don't like the Republican bill, but you at least, the categories seem the same on the policing reform, or you indicated that. I wonder if you see more urgency here on police reform than you saw on, you know, kind of the gun question or any number of other bills that the Senate has not taken up. I mean, at least you're both working on the same topic. I wonder if that's notable to you at all.
Well, the gun issue is very important. Yesterday was the 5-year anniversary, as you know, of Emmanuel, that terrible shooting where that young man went in there, prayed with people, and then shot them dead. So carrying that around all the, for that long time, but memorializing it again yesterday. So the gun issue is a very important issue, and it's one that is very background check legislation, including Mr. Clyburn's South Carolina fix, is important to us. And like 80% of American people support that, including gun owners who have to have background checks, and they do comply with that and support that legislation. We haven't seen tens of thousands of people in the streets day in and day out over a long period of time. A message that spread throughout the world about justice, about justice. So that demonstration in the streets was about this issue, about police brutality, but also about fairness, just fairness across the board. And when you're talking about brutality and you're talking about safety, you're talking about guns too. So that continues to be a very important issue for us. But you would have to admit, and it's quite obvious to all of us, that we have not ever seen anything quite like the peaceful demonstrations that are out there, awakened by the visible strangulation, lynching, chokehold of George Floyd and the reaction that people had to it. Wasn't the first time it happened, it happened many times before. But it just somehow or other was the tipping point. I'll just close by saying what I've said to you before. And we had Ryan Stevenson, we talked to him about when we had the Lynching Museum in Alabama, where many of us were just there in March. And when you go to, he has two, one's like a monument and the other one's a museum. When you go to the museum, it's about slavery and this or that. And I bring it up again because as a mom, it just impressed me so. I had my grandson with me when we saw this. There are two little children on the wall. They're slaves. And they speak. And they say, "Mama, Mama," the little children, "Mama, Mama, has anyone seen our mother? Does anyone know where our mother is?" And of course, you know the mother has been separated from the children and the brutality of all of that. And then to hear George Floyd call after his mother, just a universal call. The humanity of it all. I think it just struck such a chord.
You know where it struck a chord? That she gave him an honor, a memorial flag that not every single person who served the country, well, nobody gets the one from that flew over Congress. This is disgusting. Mama, well, tell me about the mama that all his other victims uttered. It's disgusting. Disgusting. Pull your hair out, crazy. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Right. Now we're going to talk social media right after this short break, but take that in what she just said. Welcome back, everyone. So I've like been tweeting up a storm because I got just a notification saying that my site, my Tori Says page on Facebook will not be distributed as much because you have fake news. I had fake news saying that Barack Hussein Obama funded Wuhan. We know this. It's actually documented. Fake news that it's a plandemic. So I'm not allowed to put a documentary up that makes 100% sense because they've canceled the doctor, right? That's it. And they have this company called Lead Stories. We should start digging on who funds them. That sprung out of nowhere that are now the fact checkers digging in to make sure they can give everyone dings. They're working overtime. Why? Because time is up on that. Big tech is now going to be held accountable.
holding big tech accountable, Google cutting off ad revenue to right-leaning website Zero Hedge, and also threatening the same for The Federalist. The company says the sites failed to meet Google's standards on offensive content. Missouri Senator Josh Hawley introducing legislation, meanwhile, that would remove immunity from big tech holding companies like Google, accountable for censoring different political viewpoints. We have heard from the Department of Justice as well. Joining me right now is Texas Senator, Senate Foreign Relations, and Senate Judiciary Committee member Ted Cruz. Senator, it's great to see you this morning. Thank you so much for being with me.
Good morning, Maria. Always good to be with you.
Your reaction to what has taken place at Google, and let me just point out that last week there were reports that Google had eliminated the image of Churchill, Winston
Yep.
Churchill. And then after there was a big, you know, hype about it, why would you eliminate Churchill's image? They said, oh, it was a mistake. Now you've got this pushback on The Federalist and Zero Hedge, basically threatening to rip off their advertising revenue, Senator.
Now, that's exactly right. And it's worth noting the power that Google has amassed. It's unlike anything we've ever seen in history. There's never been a company that controls more information and critically more access to information. Over 90% of the searches done are done through Google. And their control of search, their control of ad revenue, has the ability to control what the American people hear, learn, understand. And in this instance, they really abused that power. They went after The Federalist, which is a conservative media organization, and they threatened to demonetize them, to cut off all ad revenue. And in the internet world, that can be the difference between life or death. Now, The Federalist wasn't even sure what the basis was. They were eventually told that Google had some problems with some of the comments on their website. Not what they'd written, the articles, the journalism they'd put up, but instead individual users had written some comments that were offensive. I sent a letter this week to the CEO of Google pointing out that this was blatant censorship and listing about a dozen left-wing sites, all of which have comments. Now, I don't know what the comments were that Google deemed offensive, but I guarantee you those left-wing sites have all sorts of profane and racist and objectionable comments that people have put there. Google is not imposing the standards on them. And most critically, Maria, Google's not imposing the standards on itself. Google owns YouTube, the massive video platform. And if you take just a minute and look at the YouTube comments, you see all the time offensive, racist, profane comments. And so one of the questions, I demanded production of a number of documents, a number of internal materials from Google as to why they were abusing their monopoly position. Google is a monopoly, and why they were abusing their monopoly position to try to harm a competitor of theirs and impose standards on The Federalist that they weren't imposing on their very own company, YouTube.
Well, we also see that on Twitter. We also
yeah.
see that social media in general, these companies have become bigger and more powerful than anybody expected. You would like to see some competition in this industry, but how do you stoke competition? I mean, you know, Google has what, 95% of the market in search, Senator?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and they're getting more and more brazen. I mean, when you talk to them, the limits of their hubris seem to know no bounds. And so I, some time ago, sat down with the CEO of YouTube, who described how they had demonetized Steven Crowder, who's a conservative comedian. And she explained to me very matter-of-factly that Crowder had not done anything to violate their rules. He was completely consistent with their rules. But essentially, some left-wing users complained, and so they decided simply to cut off his revenue. Now, and she basically said to me, but look, you should be happy because we haven't banned him. We haven't silenced him. We just don't let him make any money. And I asked her, I said, who the hell are you to decide who gets to speak and who doesn't? And it's only the left that's asking for you to censor. I'm not here asking for you to censor Bernie Sanders or AOC or whatever other lefty socialist you may be talking about. I think the best answer for bad speech is more speech. But big tech has an arrogance that they believe their political views are the only ones that matter, and they're going to silence anyone who disagrees. And it's a very profitable approach. And with Google in particular, I think their conduct last week, you know, it's interesting. It really crossed a line. Because this conduct last week, I believe, clearly violates the antitrust laws. And the reason is they were using ad revenue. They were using money to go after a competitor of theirs with what is clearly a differential on their own wholly owned YouTube. Monopolies can't do that. Monopolies get shut down, get broken down. They face treble damages when they try to do that. But Google has the arrogance of Silicon Valley that they believe the laws don't apply to them. I'm hopeful this administration is going to make very, very clear that's not the case.
And this administration, the Justice Department, is recommending new legislation holding Facebook, yeah, Google, Twitter liable for some online content. They could get sued. Don't forget, on Twitter, there's also shadow banning. You've got, yep, many of your colleagues in the House right now suing Twitter, yep, like Devin Nunes, for this very reason. Let me ask you this, because we're only a few months away from another presidential election, Senator. Are you worried about some of these social media companies, as you call it, arrogance, trying to cheat, trying to suppress speech going into the presidential, yeah, election?
Yeah, look, big tech is angry that Donald Trump got elected, and they're angry at themselves for letting him get elected. And I believe big tech has resolved. They won't let it happen again. They're going to do everything they can to try to silence any speech that they don't like. And they're brazen about it. They've discovered that they can do it without major consequences, at least to date. You know, I've chaired a whole series of hearings looking at big tech censorship. I think this is the single biggest threat to our democracy. In one of those hearings, we heard testimony from an academic named Dr. Robert Epstein, who's done the only empirical study of Google searches. He found in the last election in 2016 that Google's manipulated, misleading searches shifted upwards of 2.6 million votes to Hillary Clinton. And the interesting thing about Dr. Epstein, he's not a Republican. He's not a conservative. He is a liberal Democrat who supported and voted for Hillary Clinton. And yet he testified before my committee that he was horrified to see big tech, a handful of Silicon Valley billionaires, exercising blatant censorship and deception to try to change the results of an election. He also testified in 2020, if they do it again and lean in hard, they could move upwards of 15 million votes. This is a profound threat, and it's why I've been meeting, wow, with the administration over and over and over again. The Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General, the President, the Chief of Staff, the White House Counsel, the Chairman of the Federal Trade Commission, all of them I've met with on this topic, to say we need all of the resources of the administration focused on stopping this lawless conduct and protecting free speech in our elections. Because if we don't, Silicon Valley billionaires, yeah, control, well, and decide our elections.
Well, this new legislation coming out of the DOJ that they're proposing is targeting Section 230. As you, yep, know, a decades-old portion of the law that spares social media companies from being held liable for their content, their posts, photos, videos uploaded to their sites. That's because there was a thinking that they were the platform. They, yep, were the platform for lots of different ideas. But what we're seeing is they're more than just a platform. They're deciding what should be on that platform. And in many cases, it's liberal content versus conservative content.
No, that's right. And I'll tell you, big tech made a change within the last few years. In one of the hearings I chaired, we pulled up an internal Google presentation. It was a PowerPoint about 50 pages long. It was entitled The Good Censor. That's what they called it, The Good Censor. In it, it contrasted between what they called the old way of doing the Internet here in the United States, the laissez-faire free speech model, let people speak, have their rights. They contrasted that with the new, and this is what they called it, the European-style censorship model. And the companies that Google identified as engaged in the new European-style censorship model were Google, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And so this is not accidental. They've made a decision to change, and they've done it because they believe they have the power, and no one will hold them to account. I think we've got a responsibility to hold them to account.
Yeah, we do. And the article that I have in draft, I'm actually going to run through some points because I analyzed all the verbiage in Section 230 for my readers, is that there are 4 points that they've carved out, okay? There's the Bad Samaritan carve-out. There's the carve-outs for child abuse, terrorism, cyber-stalking, and terrorism, and case-specific carve-outs for actual knowledge or court judgments. So I'm going to run through these right quick so you understand where we're going with this. So the first one is incentivizing online platforms to address illicit content. If you remember, I actually wrote an article that had very explicit pictures of how there is child pornography and child exploitation on Twitter's platforms. And it's not links like, hey, DM me or whatever, aside from the fact that they're all swapping information. There were actually videos of prepubescent children either being forced to conduct acts posing in really disgusting ways and whatnot. So this one, this protection is no longer going to be there. For a good example of it is they're no longer going to have immunity by purposely facilitating, hosting, or soliciting content by other parties for such activities. So it means that you're not going to get any tax breaks and you're in trouble. Of course, a good example is Backstage, right? Now, child abuse, this refers not only to physical and sexual abuse, but verbal and cyber abuse. So on a basic level, if your child has been harassed, defamed, cyberbullied, and the platforms do not protect them by removing the content and or banning the people that are actually engaging in such behavior, imagine if they're actually adults harassing your child, that's even worse, then you can actually sue the social media platform for defamation and cyber harassment. Because if the child abuse of harassment is considered criminal because it's perpetual, private information or whatever, or violating things like Marcy's Law and other local and federal law, the damages soar. And Facebook, Twitter, YouTube don't want to get sued. What? Oh, they have an army of lawyers. Yeah, we're 300 million strong. Could you imagine if each and every one of us filed a lawsuit? They would be spending so much money in litigation. It's ridiculous. In the case of physical abuse, that's a no-brainer. Any pictures, videos, and other content showing any physical abuse, sexual abuse, or exploitation are a violation in first and foremost, federal criminal laws. And if social media platforms allow such content to exist, they are actually partaking in the perpetuation of that crime. So now they're going to be held accountable. So in my article, I'm just pretty much spelling it out for everyone. Now, terrorism, obviously, Laura Loomer is banned from Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, yet ISIS posts videos, they have groups where they chat, and even domestic terrorists like Antifa do. Cyber harassment, cyber stalking. Let me tell you something. It's 2020. Your stalkers no longer hang out your window with videos, right? Because they get caught on camera. Cyber stalking and cyber harassment is a real thing. There are people that are, you know, psychologically so messed up that they will send you messages upon messages upon messages. They will create groups and they will start to demonize you and grow and grow and grow. We hate him. We hate her. Let's all talk and let's take pictures. Let's stalk them. If you see them, send me a picture. If you see anything, send it to me. And then they amplify. Now, that's actually cyber stalking / cyber harassment. That's both. And it's just like the serial killers with the, you know, pasted. I actually used a picture, you know, where they used to paste the letters from serial killers. They're like that because they're insane. They're severely deranged. They are so obsessed that they will stop at nothing to harass people. Now, we do have laws, city, state, and federal laws that protect you from such behavior. But it seems that authorities don't have the time for this paperwork. So now, if you have filed with authorities, and I know that I've filed many, not just for me, but for other people on behalf of others, lots of reports sent to the Justice Department over the past 5 years on cyber stalking, cyber harassment, cyber exploitation. And you know, local law enforcements don't do anything. They're just like free speech. All right. Well, that's why they can't get grants. This is where questions are going to be coming into it. And, you know, in the end, those little cities and or whatever communities, I have this one case out of Iowa, which is interesting, that is actually now moving along to that port, where, you know, they got in trouble and they were reprimanded by not being able to get some grant from the Department of Justice because they were not implementing their local cyber harassment, cyber stalking laws. So in the end, that cyber bully, which was, disabled, you know, disgruntled dude that lived in a shack, you know, just social security. He just hated everybody. He had created this group of over like thousands of people that they would target this, poor man for nothing. And these people are severely deranged. They will stop at nothing. And the 9 times out of 10, they've never even met their target. They don't even know in reality who their target is. Like they've seen them or whatever. It's like fans, but not fans. They're like, oh, I love you. No, no, no. Love your songs. No, it's, you know, like Die Hard, I faint Michael Jackson fans. No, this is like the other side, the ones that will come and kill you because they're so obsessed. And so social media has facilitated such type of cyber harassment and cyber bullying and cyber stalking. And so now they're not going to be protected anymore. So anybody that has engaged in any such activity right now, simple filing at Facebook, subpoena goes and done. Not only are they banned, I actually interviewed someone. I was waiting. That's why I didn't put the article yesterday. I actually got a hold of a legal intern for Facebook that told me that they strive for a safe environment, blah, 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 blah. But they said that if someone is found to have perpetually harassed someone on a public platform, you know, intentionally, right? Which means they're constantly doing it, and they will search their messages, and they, you know, and some people think because they deleted their message, it's deleted. It's not. And they will be removed from Facebook forever. It's like they're not going to be allowed to have Facebook anymore. And now what's going to happen is, you know how Parlay, in order to be verified, they want your ID? Facebook and Twitter are going to ask for your IDs. And this is going to, every time you sign up for Facebook, you're going to be asked for ID. So that way they know who to come to if they get sued. And this is going to be glorious because there won't be cyber harassment. Now, if you post things that are true, then you shouldn't worry about, you know, being sued, right, at all. But no one's going to sue a loser. They're going to sue the social media company. And in the end, people will then have to sue back to get access to Facebook and Twitter. I'm telling you this now because this is how it goes in the future. So this is going to be messy. It's going to be crazy, and people all over the place are going to be going nuts. Now, I put out tweets showing how people have been calling to burn down the White House that are celebrities that are blue check marks, and I have to wonder why they're blue check marks. You know, I already sent that stuff over a week ago to, you know, Secret Service. Obviously, I don't use... Never mind. I'm going to leave it at that. So that was already sent. So you have to wonder how this is all going to pan out. Then we're going to have then, oh, I just want to say this section 230 not only will not protect them anymore from the, where the platform knows that there's third party content that's violating federal law, and it was used where the platform was provided with a court judgment that the content is unlawful in any respect. So if they have been, if they know that something is in violation of federal criminal law, or if they have received a court judgment that the content is unlawful, then and like Facebook and Twitter already know that it's criminal. They already know it's criminal, but they're letting it exist. That also does not allow them for immunity, which means that the Justice Department will be filing on people's behalf. That's good. That's really good. So we're going to be having a lot of developments on the social media front. But I'm telling you that you are now going to be asked for your identification. So if you have engaged in any such harassment, any such trolling, super trolling, right? You will be banned for life on Facebook, because when this gets implemented, all of that you've done has to be scrubbed by Facebook. Like every single post you made, every single post that was shared because of the post you made, and anyone found with malicious, trolling-ish, defamatory, libelous, blah, 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 will be banned from Facebook. You will have to go through adjudication processes in order to get back on. So this is going to be a lot of fun and very interesting. And this is pretty much what is going to happen. There is no immunity when you make decisions. That's what happens. If you decide that you want to implement specific rules, then this rule does not apply to you. No more Section 230 shield. No more protecting yourself into saying that you know best and what you say goes and nobody else. I'm going to play just a couple of minutes of, I don't know if I should get to that. I think we should listen to it, though. So Project Veritas found an insider that came out with information showing that Facebook prefers to hire foreigners on H-1B visas as opposed to American citizens. This obviously causes harm to our job environment, but also indicates just how they're all into that plan of killing the American economy. Take a listen.
What he said was an internal Facebook document. Facebook says the document is, quote, not authentic. Our Facebook insider stands by his claim that it is. We believe, at the very least, there are many questions about this document and Facebook's actions after learning we had acquired it, which includes retaliation against at least one Facebook employee for document security. Facebook now needs to answer for some of these questions. Facebook is saying this document is not real. In fact, their spokesperson says that, quote, this is not an authentic document. Your response to that?
It obviously to an authentic source, which leads me to believe it is an authentic document. Maybe the people who are speaking do not know of it, but it is definitely there.
Can you speak a little more specifically to how you obtained it? Like, in other words, it was observed on the server, or so there was some type of email exchange that occurred?
Yes. I happened to obtain it through email that was sent, that happened to also be sent to me as well, in a way, and I received it that way. Yes. So I can't tell exactly what department it had or what it came from. But it's addressed definitely to the human resources.
It was addressed to human resources?
Yes.
And it was from an email marked asterix@facebook.com?
Yes.
So, one more time, do you believe that this document is an authentic Facebook internal document?
I believe it is.
And it is, because the person that actually gave him the document was then restricted in access to any documents on Facebook. So he was revoked his security. So that tells you everything you need to know. It tells you they're guilty. It tells you just how these companies operate and how anti-American they are. Now, on that note, I want to wish you guys a wonderful evening. God bless from all of us here at Red State, and I'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place.